You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
We've talked a lot in recent times about the players and what a disrupted few months it has been for them. But what about the umpires? Today, we're excited to be talking all things umpiring with Chris Brown, one of New Zealand's representatives on the ICC International Panel of Umpires. As well as an international umpire, Chris was also a very handy cricketer himself, representing Auckland, the Cook Islands, plus, of course, the mighty East Coast Bays Cricket Club. So let's get to it. Chris Brown, welcome to the Top Order podcast.
Thanks very much.
So we've just been lucky enough to talk to Dean Brownlee from ND and are doing the rounds, talking to representatives from all of the provinces here across New Zealand. So he was just telling us, I think, about some of the playing conditions that are going to potentially be a little bit different. So regulations change, so there's kind of no saliva on the ball at the moment, home umpires in test matches, more reviews. How does that all get conveyed to you, and how many of those sort of rule book pages you have to kind of tear up and think about again as you approach a new season of cricket?
Yeah, it's certainly going to be probably one out of the box this season coming up. As you mentioned, no saliva on the ball. That's going to be interesting for a lot of players and to see how that goes. Umpires wiping the ball down with a cloth of some sort and maybe spraying it if need to. So yeah, look, it's just the world, I guess, the way it is at the moment, isn't it? People are going to have to adjust to it. We're going to have to learn to adjust to it pretty quickly. But you know, and that's all been communicated to us through the ICC, via email and through our coach that I speak to on a weekly basis, and that, and we've been lucky enough, to get a sort of a heads up on how it went over in England, and that there were no real issues with saliva on the ball with the test matches that were played in England, and the home umpires that there were no issues. Yeah, there's an extra review for 2020 one days and test matches and that. So it's kind of just the world we're in at the moment. I guess you just have to suck it up and get on with it. And at the end of the day, you'd have to say we'd be pretty lucky if we can be playing cricket.
I've got a random logistical question from you. England, and I'm an Englishman, as you can probably tell from my accent, we try and change the ball about every 5 minutes, particularly when it's not swinging. What's to stop a team just coming up to you as an umpire when the ball isn't doing what they want it to do and saying, oh, sorry, umpire, I've just put heaps of saliva on this. Can we change it? Is there a mandate that you guys have got, a regulation that governs that?
Yeah, that comes down to it. So they can be penalised with the 5 penalty runs, so you'll get a warning first. If it happens again, you'll get a second and final warning. And every time it happens after that, it's five penalty runs. And if you need to change the ball because you're trying to change the condition of the ball, then so be it. But I like to think people are going to be a little bit smarter than that, hopefully.
Yeah, do you think that the regulations will be largely sort of self-regulating, or do you see yourselves as umpires having to enforce those kind of regulations You must have to have your eyes on a swivel potentially if the players are going to try and game the system, right?
Yeah, you're certainly going to need to be a lot more observant, I guess, in that. Watch the ball, you know, go from the keeper back to the bowler in that international level. I guess you're lucky you've got 26 cameras, however many it is, to help keep an eye on it, and a third umpire and a match ref in that. But I guess at first class level, it'll be up to the umpires on the field in that. And you just got to be vigilant as you are with the possibility of ball tampering in that. And if you see someone putting saliva on it, we know what to do. And you'd like to think it's not going to be an issue, but if it is, then we know what we have to do.
You mentioned a coach before. What does training look like for an international umpire? I mean, are you guys sitting down, kind of, I guess, watching all the other games and kind of making your own decisions? How does it look for you?
Yeah, so there's a certain extent of that. On one drive, we can have a look at the dismissals and the appeals from other games that are happening around the world. Sit there yourself and mute it and, you know, go through the decision yourself. From a third umpire point of view, David Levins is our ICC coach. He lives in Melbourne, Australia. So I talk to him once a week, just to get an idea of what's happening in that, but also that once a week I'm doing third umpire training with him via Skype and that. So he'll basically share his screen with him. And we'll go through some scenarios that have occurred in that, you know, from a third umpire point of view. So otherwise, you know, it's a lot of reading playing conditions, laws, for your test matches, T20s, one days, all that stuff. And I guess also getting used to this possibility now that third umpire will be calling no balls, you know, front foot no balls and that. So it's just, you know, something else for the third umpire to be doing on top of everything else.
And how intimately involved are you with the providers of that technology? So the guys who design and build Hawkeye and the DRS systems, how involved are you with the actual procurers or the makers of that technology in terms of what its capabilities are and what the limitations and like the kind of margins for error there are that you need to factor into your decision-making process?
Yeah, I don't know how much. I guess that's probably true. ICC head office and that over in Dubai, but I would imagine there's a lot of communication with them and what it is that the ICC are requiring from them. You know, they've got to know that, you know, in order for it to be a no ball, it's first impact, you know, so it doesn't matter about the front foot sliding over the line and that. If the first impact's behind the line, then that's good enough. So they've got to know that. But yeah, I don't know. I guess that's a hard one to answer for me. But I would suspect there's a lot of communication between the provider and the ICC, and no doubt they get back from the guys on the umpires on the elite panel and what makes things easier for them, and how, you know, how can they help them do their job better.
And you also touched on the neutral home umpires now. I mean, do you think, is that something you're kind of excited about now, that I guess potentially the whole New Zealand summer will be umpired by New Zealand umpires, and, you know, you might even have the opportunity to do a Boxing Day test in New Zealand in front of your home crowd?
Yeah, oh, look, that's certainly very exciting. You know, we're lucky on the international panel, we get to umpire T20s and ODIs. At home and, you know, and around the world, not so much test matches. So, you know, if a test match was to come along and to get the opportunity to stand in a test match, first of all, but to be able to do it in New Zealand would be certainly pretty special. So, you know, if that was to happen, it would be, it would be quite a buzz, I think, to be fair.
So what's the sort of feeling around that, being able to stand in home test matches? Is that something we can see happening once we can travel freely again?
Yeah, I guess it's something the ICC could look at, and maybe they are, I don't know. But, you know, with technology these days and that, and I'd like to think the integrity of umpires around the world is, you're going to try something silly, you know, to advantage the home team, and you're going to get caught out, and have a pretty short career, I would have thought so. Look, I think it's something that, you know, they possibly could look at, and maybe they are looking at, I don't know, but it's been banded around, you know. Do you need neutral umpires for these things with all the technology that's going on around at the moment? You know, who knows? I don't know the answer. Personally, you know, I like the idea of neutral umpires, certainly for test matches. You know, it's just one less thing for a team to have to worry about.
Yeah, okay. So down to the nitty-gritty here. How is your performance assessed at the international level? I guess, and that sort of leads me to the next question of how you move up the ladder towards the elite panel. I'm guessing it's a bit more complex than the club scoring system, 1 to 10.
Yeah, I guess so. First of all, we've got a match referee at every international match and that, so they log every decision you make, out, not out. You know, they might look if there's a marginal wide call or anything like that. They'll look at your man management, your match management, how you conduct yourself on the field, how you conduct yourself if you cock something up and you have to overturn a decision. You know, does your body language change in that? So they look at all that. So, you know, it's gone away from just the right decision or the wrong decision sort of thing. Mm. There's a whole bigger holistic view now of umpiring and that. So, you know, and they report on how the game went and how they feel you went, the decisions you made, and whether you looked confident, had to talk to someone for, you know, bowler running on the wicket, whatever it is. And it goes back to the ICC. So we get those after every game. And then, I don't know, I guess as far as how do you get up to the elite panel on that, it comes down to, who knows, I guess performances, and that is, you know, the funnel gets smaller and smaller as you go up the grade, so to speak, and that, it's, you know, it gets harder and harder. So, yeah, who knows, you just got to bide your time. You just, any opportunities you get, you just got to make the most of them, whether it's an ICC tournament overseas, you know, perform well there, get a semi-final or a final or whatever, have a pretty good summer in that, as long as you're prepared and, you know, when the opportunity comes, you put your best foot forward and what will be, will be.
So I guess following on from that, sitting at home, I always really feel, I guess, for the umpires, when you get that moment where the decision's gone upstairs and you get that horrible moment where the TV umpire comes on and says, Chris, that's wickets hitting. You're going to need to overturn your decision. How do you cope with that mentally? A, when you get that situation where it's like, your decision's right, Chris, stick with your on-field decision, versus the flip side where they say, nah, you've got that horribly wrong. It's pitched a foot outside leg stump. It's, you know, missing leg stump as well. You need to overturn that. How do you kind of stay level and how do you cope with that when you're on the field?
Yeah, I guess in some ways you're quite lucky. There's normally a big screen there so you can see as the third umpire is talking through it, you know, whether you need to start digging a hole for yourself.
Yeah, you're not tearing up under the sunnies, no.
No. It's a feeling, you know, I still got to get used to when you get it right, it's great. You know, you obviously feel 10 foot tall and you know, pretty happy you got it right. If you get it wrong, I guess there's varying degrees to that extent as well. You know, sometimes, you know, the one down league side, whether it's just flick the glove or not, or you haven't heard anything and the technology shows, you know, you give it not out, technology shows there's a little spike there. You know, sometimes you just got to forgive yourself and say, well, okay, well, that ball was too good for me. I'll cop it, fair enough. Other times, you know, it might be a little bit harder, but you've just got to, just really got to suck it up and have thick skin. And especially when you do have to overturn, you know, your ego takes a bit of a hit, to be fair, but that's where having a good routine, I think, really helps. Because the last thing you want to do is make another mistake the next ball. So if you've got a good sound routine that you can go back to, that you've done every other ball before, whether you've had to make a decision or not, refocus, reset yourself, and worry about it after the game, or out of square leg if you want to think about it. But you need to process it quickly and move on, because the last thing you want to do is make two or three bad mistakes in a short period of time.
Speaking of that routine, there's going to be a change to a lot of the playing conditions around the world now, with third umpires looking at front foot, no balls. How much does that change the umpire's routine, and does that give you more or less focus in terms of like what's going on down the other end of the field, rather than having to change your focus from looking at the front foot, no ball, and then all of a sudden having to be 0.4 of a second later assessing what's going on down the other end?
Yeah, I guess it's, everyone will be different in that, no doubt. You may not have to look at the front foot quite so hard. You might want to see, you know, where the front foot's landing. Is the bowler coming wider of the crease? Is he bowling further back? Is he coming closer to the crease? You know, but using the crease, it's nice to know for angles, obviously, for LD. As far as having to adjudicate no balls and that, no, it looks, it would be nice to not to have to worry about that so much and concentrate more so what's happening really at the business end, and get that right. You know, it'd be nice to spend a little more time, and especially in 2020s or one days, you know, when the batsmen are moving around. Has he moved a foot outside off? Has he moved away to leg? So it's not surprising you when you're looking at the front foot, you know, focusing on the other end and, hello, no, that's not where the batsman was when I last looked at it. So, yeah, look, I think it'll be good, but everyone will be different. I know we were lucky enough to have that technology at the Women's World Cup in February, March over in Australia, and everyone was different. Some guys were just saying, look, I'm not even going to look at the front foot now. I'm just going to worry what's happening at the other end. And others are, well, you know, that's my routine. It's what I do, and that's what I'll be sticking with. So, and hopefully save a little heartache. You know, you see from time to time when a no ball is caught on field and technology shows there was maybe something behind and slipped forward, so we can hand it to the third umpire now.
You've obviously been privileged to play and umpire the game at a high level. Can you describe the difference between being a player in a pressure situation, you know, maybe defending a low number of runs off the final over of a game, to being an umpire in that situation?
Don't worry about bowling the last over of too many games. If there was something on it, that was up to someone else. that was up to Michael Hendry or someone like that. But, yeah, look, I guess that you know, can make the less mistakes, and, you know, the bowler misses his Yorker, you know, can get hit out of the park, or an umpire, you know, if he's bowling full and wide of the at the wide line, and that comes down to you to either call that a wide or a fair delivery in that. So, yeah, look, there's a lot, and as far as the differences, I mean, who knows? I guess in that situation, if I was bowling, if there's anything, I know when I'm umpiring, 6 runs to win with two balls left or whatever, you're as nervous as hell, because you don't want to be coming off the game having an influence on an umpire because you got something wrong. But it is. Look, it's very nerve-wracking. I don't know. I guess my palms get sweaty, and I try not to fall over, I suppose.
And I guess when we look at umpiring and playing and, you know, what we do in our respective careers, you get a buzz from your professional success, you know, whether that's, you know, you win a big pitch, you know, you hit a big six. As an umpire, do you feel that level of fun or enjoyment when you get a really tough call right in a big moment? Or have you got to be so focused professionally because you're the, you know, the sole arbiter of that game at that point? Do you get that rush? Do you get that, you know, yes, wow, like you did when you were a player or in your professional career outside of cricket?
Yeah, oh, look, you certainly do. You know, I mean, every umpire knows when they come back to you to put the umpire on screen and that, and it's, you know, you've given someone out and you're told to stick with your original out decision and give them out again. You know, sometimes you want to do a cartwheel or a little fist pump and that. You've just got to rein yourself in, and, you know, vice versa. If you need to overturn it, you just got to have positive body language and overturn your decision and get on with it as if you're just another thing. So, look, it is a buzz. You know, the more you get right, obviously, the more you're going to enjoy the game, and the more you have to overturn your decisions, the harder the game's going to be. But it's, yeah, look, it is certainly buzzing. You know, it's like you say, it's the batsman hitting a six right out of the middle of the bat, and for an umpire to get your decisions right and to be proved by technology that, you know, what you saw and what you heard was correct is, yeah, it's a buzz, and, you know, it certainly does give you a nice rush.
And you count those as two outs in your KPIs as well. You get the original one and the and the overturn. So, yeah, you're two for two.
Yeah, that's right.
When you come off the ground at the end of the day as an umpire, have you had a good game and your sort of mate at Square Legs had a good game, maybe the 30s had a good game as well, do you guys like sit in the dressing room and have a beer and go, yeah, actually we did a pretty good job today? Or is it so professional that it's kind of all about the decision-making process and the review and all that kind of stuff? Like, how much do you enjoy the end of the day sitting in the shed and going, yeah, I got that one right today, I had a good game?
Yeah, very much. That's certainly pleasing aspect of the job, and that, you know, and I think most of us would agree that, or the umpires anyway, that if you come off and the umpires haven't had an influence on the game and they're not talking about the umpires, then you've had a good day and done a great job. But there's always things that we know we could do better, you know, or that certainly at the international level we'll have that peer review where you might say, Brownie, could have done this a little better, or you could have been a little clearer with this, just indicating someone get off the danger area, and, you know, the bowler and his follow through and that. So I don't think there's no such thing as the perfect game. There'll always be work ons and that, and processes to follow in that. But look, like I say, coming off the ground, no one's talking about the umpires, haven't had an influence on the game. I think that's pretty much a good day's work, I would have thought.
How about, are you able to appreciate what the players do out there? You know, like for someone's having an awesome spell of bowling or a magical innings, are you kind of getting excited about being, you know, we sort of think as someone just sitting on the sideline, you've got the best seat in the house, but are you too focused on what you're doing, or are you able to kind of get a buzz out of that as well?
You know, you certainly can get a buzz out of it. You know, it's great. I used to bowl, so I love watching top-class bowlers work over a batsman, or away swinger, hang on, something's got to be coming back shortly sort of thing. And sure enough, you know, one comes back, and it is great to watch. And you know, I've got no issues handing someone's cap back at the, you know, the end of an over if they've bowled well, or, you know, or they've batted well. I'm just saying, hey, congrats, you know, well batted or well bowled that over. But look, I think it's good. Certainly at the international level, every ball, you know, for an umpire, certainly for me anyway, you're on edge because something's going to happen, and you know there's one or two cameras around that are going to show you up sort of thing and that. But you know, when someone is in the middle of a good spell or bowling well and that, I certainly don't think there's any harm in just saying well bowled as you hand back the cap and, you know, toddle out the square leg.
So you've umpired games in front of massive crowds and also done also 4-day stuff and stuff where there is smaller crowds. Does the noise have any effect on you, or are you so focused that how do you deal with that, you know, extra stimulation?
Yeah, that is a good question, because obviously your Plunkett Shield is, you know, and our first class, there's not a lot of people that come and watch, and you get up to the international, the one day is the 2020s, you get good crowds. And certainly when India were here a couple of years ago, the loudest crowd I've come across was at Eden Park with T20 there, full house, 40,000, never experienced anything like that before. And, you know, it just gives you goosebumps in that, but it raises you as well. You know, you almost grow another leg. And if you can put the crowd out of your mind, and like I said, this is where a good routine is, I think, vital, that you can hit that routine again, reset yourself, concentrate on what you need to do. Sure, you may not hear the faint next with the noise because it's just constant the whole time. I don't know how the umpires in India do it, but they deal with that day in, day out, you know, for all their games and that. But it does, you know, it raises you. It's a great atmosphere. And to be fair, like one of you said before, you're in the best seat in the house. And, you know, that is so true. You're up close and personal with some of the best players in the world. And you get to experience the buzz and the atmosphere that they are while they're out there doing their thing and you're doing yours.
We saw recently at some controversy at the IPL around one short decision. For me, it's kind of raised questions around whether technology should expand to include more third umpire decision making. I'm personally, we've broached this topic a lot of times. I don't like the technology in sport as much as the other guys do. Do you think that technology needs to go that far, or do we as fans just need to accept that there is a human element to this decision making process? Where's that line for you?
Yeah, there is that human element. You know, I do believe I think having too much technology is just going to slow the game down. And I know then there's a counter argument that, you know, you want the right decision made, but technology, as you know, technology is not always right either. You know, your ball tracking or whatnot, or it's not. It's not 100%. You know, mistakes can be made. So look, there is that human element, and cricket has that with, you know, batsmen when they get out, bowlers when they bowl a rubbish delivery, and that umpires when they get things wrong. It's, you know, it is part of the game, and so you don't want that one little factor having an outcome on the game, and sometimes it is just going to. But you got, I guess, at the end of the day, you've got to remember. It is just a game at the end of the day, and mistakes that are made on by all parties in that. But I guarantee you that game wasn't lost because of the one short run. No doubt there was probably dropped catch beforehand.
100%. Right.
There was a wide that was given that maybe shouldn't have been, a no ball, any number of things. You know, there's I don't believe there's always. Not in 99% of the cases, there's not one thing that's, you know, responsible for the loss. It's a combination of things over, as you know, 40 overs or 100 overs of cricket or 98 overs in a day, sort of thing. So, yeah, look, technology certainly has its place, and I like the technology that we've got. It's not, like I say, it's not perfect, but I think it, you know, the players see it. They know it is what it is, but they accept it. And it, I believe, anyway, that it saves a bit of angst on the field and that. You know, once the decision is upheld or overturned or whatever, players are generally pretty good. They just tend to get on with it. You know, they see what they see on the big screen, accept it, and move on.
I feel like sometimes the fans are the harshest critics of umpires. It almost feels like all of the fans of cricket, and I'm one of them, expect umpires to deliver 100% accuracy, and we all know that that's not possible. Players are human, fans are human, everyone's human. We generally tend to accept that of our players, but not so much of our umpires. How do umpires feel about potentially being held to a different standard to the rest of the cricket community, and what sort of pass mark do you guys set for yourselves in terms of the standards you set as international umpires?
Yeah, look, standards high. You go into every game, you don't want to make mistakes. You don't want to be, you know, the cause of, you know, talk after a game or anything like that. So you certainly go in with the mindset and the preparation. You're prepared as best as you can be to do what you need to do. But the fact of the matter is, chances are before you even walk out there, you're going to make mistakes or perceive mistakes. The bowler may not be happy that you've caught a wide, and, you know, sure, it might just be outside the wide crease, or it might just be inside. I guess it's a perception thing in that, but I don't know. You know, I guess, I mean, players, batsmen, they go out there, they want to score 50, 100, bowlers want to take wickets, umpires want to get all their decisions right. You know, the no balls, the wide deliveries, the short deliveries, you're out, you're not out. Your LBs, your caught behinds, everything. You know, a batsman wants to hit everything out of the middle of the bat. A bowler wants to have the ball on the string, which, you know, as we all know, they don't happen that often in that. But it's the better you prepare yourself, I guess the harder you work, the luckier you get. it's a game played by humans, and humans make mistakes, and we'll all make mistakes, and you just hope that whatever mistake you do make, you make it. It doesn't have an outcome on the game, or that no one's talking about the umpires at the end of the day. But you just got to have a bit of a thick skin.
And Brownie, you mentioned you're a bowler when you played. How hard was it to train yourself to think rationally about decisions? I remember when you first started umpiring club cricket, you were a pretty hard man to get an LBW out of.
Yeah, actually, when I started umpiring...
That's because you never had anyone LBW, Lippy, that's why. Spun it too much.
Yeah, he did. He did spin it a long way.
Big him up, Brownie.
As soon as that came out of my mouth, I was giving myself an uppercut.
we've got a small room, not enough for the ego.
Oh, dear, yeah. No, apologies about that. Where was I now? Yeah, I've lost my train of thought now.
How did you train yourself to not give everything out? Because when you're bowling, everything is out, right?
Yeah, it was. To be fair, when I was playing, everything was out. But one of the best pieces of advice I got when I started off was from Roger McCarg, and he always said, LBWs, be hard on LBWs. Be very hard on LBWs, because as you get more confident, as you get more experience, and as you know now with DRS and ball tracking and that, you'll get a better idea of what's out, what's not out. So maybe I am still hard on LBWs, I don't know. But I was purposely hard on LBWs. In one game, Colin Munro had a couple of very good shouts for LBW, which I turned down, and a third one, and he walked past me and gave me some great advice, and along the lines of, Brownie, not everything has to be in the fucking middle.
Brilliant.
So earlier we talked to Shane Dietz, who's the CEO of Vanuatu Cricket, and Deepak Patel about his experiences in PNG. They both talked about how much talent there is out there, and but there's many challenges that exist for those nations. So you played a little bit for the Cook Islands. What are your memories of that time, and how do you think those nations can improve?
Yeah, I played about 10 years, I think, for the Cook Islands. That loved it, absolutely loved it to be able to share my experiences at first class level. Back then, and that was fantastic. The guys that I played with and that love their cricket. They really do. I guess the challenges they've got, half the team, when I was playing, half live in New Zealand and all around New Zealand, obviously, and the other half live and played it on the islands, that 15 different islands there are in the Cook Islands and that. So getting together for tournaments was an issue. Just things like gear. Proper shoes, pads, bats, and that, all these sort of things are issues. But look, that was some of the best times I had, and the talent out there is batsmen in particular. They may never have read the MCC on how to book on how to bat. Get your front foot to the pitch of the ball, get eyes over the ball and whatnot, but they're hand-eye coordination, some of these guys can hit the ball a hell of a long way. And it looks ungainly, obviously, in that, but, they can score quickly. They're very athletic in the field. They got great arms on them, run between the wickets very quickly in that. So there's a lot of talent out there. And it's just getting them consistent cricket to play on a regular basis in that. And, like I say, it is great fun. Some of the East Asia Pacific tournaments I went to and that, the talent there, Vanuatu had a very strong side. Papua New Guinea was extremely strong. Fiji was. They got some really good players there, and just getting the experience of coming to New Zealand, playing, New Zealand teams, whether it's premier teams around New Zealand, teams in Australia and that, they're only going to get better and better.
Segueing slightly to umpiring development, I mean, it's a very, very lonely game, and we need umpires, and we need more umpires coming through the system and wanting to transition from a playing career to becoming umpires. What advice would you give to young men and women out there who are thinking of taking up the white coat and becoming an umpire?
To seriously just to give it a go. This umpiring was never something I wanted to do, or never something I thought I would do. I fell into it. And my biggest regret is that I didn't try it earlier. I got into it. I was watching cricket one night with my wife, the Ashes one night. Made a couple of decisions that, you know, there were shouts on the TV and that, and people turned to me and said, "Well, why don't you live it? I'm fine." You think you're pretty good? And I remember turning to her and going, "Why would I want to do that? You know, you stand out there all day and you just get abused." And I was told, you know, how hopeless I was around the weekends because I just sat there and watched cricket all day and did nothing anyway. So I was a waste of space anyway. So reading between the lines, I didn't think she wanted me around. So, you know, I made a couple of phone calls and did my exams and that, and loved it. And it wasn't until I actually, my very first game, it was just a warm-up game down at Freiburg Park at Browns Bay here, East Coast Bay, played someone. And Jules was there and she saw me walking off and I had this big grin on my face. And I just enjoyed it and I'd loved it. And ever since then, you know, I've regretted not thinking, like I say, it was not something I did, I fell into it, but if I had the time again, I would have finished playing, and like Chris Gaffney did, just went straight into it sort of thing. But my only advice would be just give it a go, see what it's like. If you enjoy it, and I'm sure you will, then just see how far you can go with it. You know, read the laws, read your playing conditions, and just learn from the best, ask questions. Just give it a go. That's all I'd say.
Brownie, look, so much thanks for your time. We always do like to finish the podcast, though, with a little bit of a quick fire round. And look, really good to actually put an umpiring spin on this, because we're normally talking about, you know, biggest six and, you know, favourite Jaffa that you've bowled. But let's talk about some umpiring decisions. So you said you feel that little surge of pride or retribution when you get one right. So what's the favourite decision that you've made since donning the white coat? Maybe a retired player that you've fired at or you really hated?
My very first DRS one was Tom Latham, sweeping Bangladesh in a one-dayer. He's the left-arm spinner. I forget his name. Shaqib, that's it. Yep, gave it out. I thought, oh, I might get out when I was watching the replay and that. I'm not sure if that's going to be hitting, and it just hit leg. Thankfully, so, you know, I started off on the right foot. But one I do remember in particular was in a one-day with, 2020 in Wellington. Colin Munro, left-hander, as you know. Left-arm, Shadid comes in. The right-arm leggy. Munro then whips around as a right-hander, has a big swipe across the line, missed it. Big appeal for LBW. I knew it was in front. I just, too much doubt, gave it not out. No, they reviewed it, and just going over the top, so it was just missing. So I was pretty happy with that one. If I could have done a cartwheel then, I would have.
And you talk about cartwheels. What about the one that keeps you up at night? What's the one you think, oh, no?
Jeez, how long have you got?
We've got time for one.
I do remember one. It wasn't a batsman anyway. It was Lockie Ferguson, of all people. He's got a big inside edge leg spinner from South Africa. Gave him out. LBW didn't see the forehead, the inside edge. He's reviewed it, looked up on the big screen, and oh, God, how the hell did I miss that?
Mm. That's all right. The groundsman already turned the roller on. That's fine. No problem. Yeah. What's we talked a little bit about this before, but what's the best innings you've witnessed as an umpire and the best spell of bowling you've witnessed as well?
Oh, best innings. Jeez, internationally, Ross Taylor got a good 100 in South Africa down in Christchurch in a one-dayer. Tom Latham got a 260-odd in a first-class game at Napier, which was pretty good to watch. It's a great place to watch. So, you know, a couple of those innings certainly stood out.
And what about the best spell of bowling when you've been standing there just going, bloody hell, how'd you play this?
Trent Bolt took five for at Hamilton. What was it, last season? A couple of seasons ago. I can't even remember who it was against. Yeah, he had it on a string that day, swinging it in, going across the batsman and that.
And then
Look, this is our final one of the quickfire round, apart from the highlight of your career, which we'll come on to in a second. But we need an answer to this. This is genuine. What's the best banter or sledging you've heard on the field? You don't need to give us the names if they're still current players and need their anonymity. But, yeah, what's the best banter or sledging you've heard out on the field? It's not the Australians. We know that, right?
No. It's not. It's, Graham Aldridge, I think he's now coach of the Northern District Knights, isn't he? In my first class debut game down at Hagley Oval, Green Steamer, the game was over in 2 days and a session. I was nervous as anything. I was turning down LBWs. I was turning down court behinds, down the leg side, everything. And another appeal, gave it not out, into the over, handed the cap back to him. One of his teammates ran past him and went, What was up with that one? And all I heard was, oh, mate, shit decision, even a worse explanation.
Oh, that's brilliant. Look, we'll go from the sublime and from the ridiculous actually to the sublime. What's the highlight of your umpiring career so far? What's the thing that gives you the most pride?
I guess a job well done, especially on the international stage and that with all the cameras and all the critiquing that goes on about it. You come off after a close game and you're happy with how you go on. The decisions have been right and that's pretty hard to beat, to be fair. That's a job well done. You can give yourself a pat on the back and open a beer. One last memory I did have, I was lucky enough a couple of years ago to go over to Australia and as part of the tri-series with England, Australia and New Zealand, go over and umpire a couple of games over there, and I was able to stand at the MCG and the SCG. And at the SCG, I was standing at square leg, and you guys will probably seen a lot of cricket too, where you look at the sunset over the old members stand and that over there, and I was standing out at square leg, and it was a beautiful night, really red, nice orange red sky behind it, and I'm standing at square leg looking over the stand there at the SCG and thinking, yeah, shit, this is pretty cool.
Magic.
Well, Brownie, look, it's been awesome to talk umpiring with you. We've talked to a lot of players. It's great to get that perspective from behind the scenes. So, look, thank you very much for your time joining us on the Top Order podcast. And, yeah, looking forward to seeing plenty of cricket on the field over this New Zealand summer. And we'll see you in the white coat, the blue coat, or whatever colour it is you guys wear now to help the guys see the ball a little bit better.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure, guys. Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to the Top Order podcast. Before you disappear from our feed, if you're a new listener, please do go and check out the back catalogue. We've spoken recently to New Zealand coach Gary Stead. We've got Graham Thorpe. We've got Shane Deets. We've got Barry Richards, Shane Bond, Colin Miller, all in the back catalogue. You can find the details www.thetoporderpodcast.com. We're the Top Order podcast on Instagram, although we're still really figuring that out. We're at Top Order Pod on Facebook and Twitter, so don't be shy to jump on, give our tweets a share or a retweet, and we'll see you next week.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.